Welcome to the February 2026 News Bulletin podcast for commercial shipping marine surveyors, put together by the International Institute of Marine Surveying. We open our podcast with an introduction from IIAMS CEO Mike Schwartz. Dear colleague, you do not need me to remind you that we are surrounded by innovative, marine sector tech on all fronts, racing ahead and burgeoning, seemingly at a pace I can't recall at any point in my lifetime. And as one gets older, rather like me these days, it is easy to turn a blind eye to what's happening, and to plow on with what we know, accepting the norm, hoping it will all just go away. But of course, it doesn't, so we must try and embrace what's new and cope with the inevitable change and resulting disruption to our lives it brings. For younger and less experienced marine surveyors, I'd suggest ignoring what is going on around them right now is dangerous, and creates knowledge voids and potential pitfalls as vessel design, hull materials, alternative fuels and evolving propulsion systems, to name but a few, present new challenges as well as opportunities. The importance of learning and continuous professional development has never been more critical. This leads me nicely on to mention the Consumer Electronics Show, which claims to be the most powerful tech event in the world. It was held at Las Vegas in January. So, what's that got to do with the maritime sector, you may well ask? I have ignored this event in previous years, but it is clear that some of the industry's movers and shakers have not. It offers an entirely different backdrop to a traditional boat show and opens up a new audience. US-based Brunswick Corporation operates at a scale that few companies in boating can ever hope to compete with. It is the world's largest marine technology company, spanning propulsion, electronics, boat building, parts, accessories, and digital services. By attending CES, Brunswick has placed boating into the broader technology conversation rather than treating it as a niche leisure market. The company returned to last month's event with its largest marine exhibit to date. Rather than focusing on a single headline product, the company's ACES approach is appearing in boats that are either in production now or close to it. ACES stands for Autonomous or Assisted, Connected, Electrified, and Shared Boating. At CES 2026, the emphasis was on showcasing exactly how those ideas translate into hardware and software that is already finding their way into real boats. John Kelly, Consumer Technology Association Vice President and CES Show Director, said, "We have certainly seen the continued evolution of boating into a technology-driven sector at CES. The show brings together the mobility ecosystem across air, land and sea, and that convergence is creating more opportunities for marine companies to meet partners, compare solutions and bring new ideas to market." Fascinating. In late December, I had the privilege of joining a group of surveyors in Plymouth, UK, an event organised by local member, Nick Healy, on what turned out to be a foul and stormy evening weather-wise. The sole topic for discussion that night was lithium-ion batteries, and the challenges they present to a surveyor, the most talked-about subject of last year. We were joined by Simon Firth from locally based Pantaneous Insurance, who gave a glimpse into the concerns and issues this technology is presenting for the insurance industry. On the subject of lithium-ion batteries, we have now sold a number of units from the newly launched lithium battery course we developed in conjunction with David and Magda O'Neill last year, and the feedback is positive. If you have yet to check out this essential four-module course, which offers 10 to 12 hours of expert tuition on the subject, please head to trainingportal.iams.org.uk for more details. And finally, I have just returned from a short trip to co-host the annual IIAMS Baltimore conference alongside members James Randy Wren and Ray Bracken, held at the MIT AGS facility on the outskirts of the city. It is always a pleasure to spend time with member surveyors, and non-members, in the US as always, the range of topics was far-reaching and provoked much discussion. My thanks to James and Ray for organizing a great and inspirational speaker lineup, and to all those who attended either in person or virtually. Survey well, Mike. For our first story, authorities have concluded the investigation into the 1994 sinking of the MV Estonia, citing the failure of the ferry's bow section as the cause of the incident. The findings include the following: no evidence of collision or explosion. There is no indication of a collision with another vessel or object when the vessel was afloat, nor any signs of explosive force in the starboard side or the bow area. Bow visor and ramp failures confirmed. Examination of the recovered bow ramp and modelling of the bow structure collapse remain consistent with the 1997 JAIC findings. The bow visor failed under wave loads, causing the ramp to open and flooding to commence on the car deck. Sinking sequence reaffirmed. Updated modelling supports the established scenario: rapid water ingress through the bow ramp leading to capsize of the vessel. Alternative sequences, including flooding from the starboard side opening, are incompatible with the calculations, witness statements and other collected evidence. Seaworthiness assessment. A combined OJK-SHK assessment states that MV Estonia was not seaworthy due to uninspected, thus unrecognized, structural weaknesses and undocumented regulatory exemptions on certificates. Survivor interviews. The interviews indicate that some amount of water was observed coming from the car deck to the cabin area below. They also indicate that no military vehicles were loaded. Based on all available evidence, it can be concluded that the Estonia sank due to the failure of the bow structure, and that the new damage on the starboard side resulted from contact with the seabed. Therefore, the report concluded there is no need to reopen the safety investigation of the accident of MV Estonia. Up next, Lloyd's Register has issued details on the International Maritime Organization Nitrogen Oxide Code amendments, which offer flexible testing for modified engines to support continued compliance. The IMO MEP C83 adopted a number of amendments to the Nitrogen Oxide Technical Code 2008 in Resolution MEP C398/83. They include parent engine test requirements for a marine diesel engine. These amendments apply to any marine diesel engine that undergoes a substantial modification or is to be certified to a nitrogen oxide tier to which it was not previously certified, so requiring recertification. Although these changes enter into force on 1 September 2026, the MEPC invited their early application as they do not alter any existing requirements and help to mitigate risks and ensure continued compliance. Visit www.lr.org for more information. In our next report, the fallout following the MV Dali accident, which caused the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore in March 2024, continues to make the news headlines and is likely to do so for many months to come. Now the vessel's builder, HD Hyundai, has weighed in to respond. It says changes made after delivery bypassed critical redundancies, triggering the second blackout that left the ship without propulsion or steering in the critical moments before the bridge strike. HD Hyundai Heavy Industries has issued a detailed and robust defense of the vessel's original design following the National Transportation Safety Board's investigation into the ship's collision with Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge. The NTSB determined that the probable cause of the collision was a loss of electrical power due to a loose signal wire connection stemming from improper wire label banding installation, resulting in the vessel's loss of propulsion and steering near the bridge. The agency also made a recommendation to HD Hyundai Heavy Industries, the Dallas builder, to incorporate proper wire label banding installation methods into its electrical department's standard operating procedures. In its statement, the South Korean shipbuilder emphasized that the MV Dali was delivered with extensive redundant systems and automatic restart capabilities designed to prevent catastrophic failures. Container ships like the MV Dali are, as NTSB described, floating cities, the company stated, noting that such vessels have onboard power plants and are built with safeguards to deal with the inevitable unpredictability of running a complex system in a harsh environment. According to HD Hyundai, the vessel was originally equipped with 4 independent diesel generators, 2 independent transformers, and fuel supply pumps set to automatic mode that would restart without crew intervention after a power outage. These redundancies, the shipbuilder noted, are required by relevant classification societies. However, the company alleges that sometime after taking possession of the MV Dali, the shipowner and operator circumvented the ship's safeguards by compromising its critical redundancies. Specifically, HD Hyundai claims the operators replaced automatic fuel supply pumps with an electrical flushing pump, single-point system designed for cleaning, not fuel supply, that can only be restarted manually and lacks critical protections. The statement read, "Using the flushing pump as a fuel supply pump sacrificed both redundancy and automation of the fuel supply system and violated established classification rules." On the day of the incident, the vessel experienced 2 blackouts. The first was caused by a wire disconnecting from a terminal block in the transformer system. Because the transformer was being used in manual mode rather than automatic, the crew had to manually switch to the backup transformer. However, when making this switch, the crew did not restart the flushing pump that had been supplying fuel to the operating generators, starving the generators of fuel and resulting in another blackout, according to HD Hyundai. The shipbuilder contends that had the vessel's systems been used as designed and manufactured, adding power would have been restored within seconds, and the second blackout, which led to the tragedy, would not have happened. The NTSB also found fault with the vessel's operations. The agency said in its report, Although not causal to the initial underway blackout, the NTSB found that the crew's operation of the flushing pump as the service pump for online diesel generators was inappropriate because the necessary fuel pressure for diesel generators 3 and 4 would not be automatically re-established after a blackout. The NTSB report further explained, as a result, the flushing pump did not restart after the initial underway blackout and stopped supplying pressurized fuel to the diesel generators 3 and 4. Thus causing the second underway blackout, low voltage and high voltage. The NTSB found that operational oversight by Synergy, the Darley's operator, was inadequate. The NTSB noted that routine inspection over the past decade should have identified the loose wire, while HD Hyundai emphasized that it was incumbent on the ship's owner and operator to engage in regular and appropriate inspection and maintenance to ensure that the systems and components on the ship remained in seaworthy condition. The NTSB also identified contributing factors beyond the vessel's systems, including the lack of bridge countermeasures and ineffective communications to warn highway workers to evacuate. The agency issued urgent recommendations to multiple federal agencies and bridge owners nationwide to assess vulnerability and implement risk reduction strategies. In its conclusion, HD Hyundai stated, the MV Dallas shipowner and operator used the vessel's systems improperly and neglected their continuing inspection and maintenance obligations. They cut corners and violated class rules, which ultimately led to the tragic incident. Next, shipyards are singular industrial environments, combining the hazards of heavy construction, manufacturing, and complex marine operations into one sprawling, high-stakes location. For any vessel owner, operator, or contractor, the yard represents a necessary but incredibly risky dry dock danger zone. To assist vessel owners and contractors in navigating these complex, high-risk environments, IMKA has published the Guidance on Safety in Shipyards. This document serves as an indispensable tool, providing a structured, phased approach to safety management from initial planning and auditing through to operational execution and final project closeout. It offers practical checklists and procedures to help companies establish a unified safety standard, bridge documentation requirements, and ultimately ensure a safe and successful project delivery. You can download the guidance at www.imca-int.com. For our next story, heavy weather and an improperly secured cargo of lithium-ion battery energy storage system units led to two fires on board the cargo vessel Genius Star 11, causing $3.8 million in damages, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. Investigators determined that the probable cause of the two in December 2023 fires was the breakaway of 41 battery energy storage systems, BESS, units in the cargo holds during heavy weather conditions due to improperly secured lashing belts, which resulted in internal structural deformation of these units and thermal runaway of lithium-ion battery packs in three of the BESS units. Ensuring proper cargo securing. In addition to following a vessel's cargo securing manual and implementing the approved vessel storage and lashing plan, a vessel's crew must also conduct a thorough inspection of all the cargo securing arrangements both during and after cargo loading. Such inspections are critical to identifying improper attachments or other concerns with cargo securement that could compromise the assumptions planners make in implementation of the plan. Not ensuring cargo is properly secured can result in cargo breakaway. Special attention should be placed on examining fitment of components, such as lashing belt hooks, wire, or chain falls used to secure the cargo to ensure they are properly seated, fully engaged, on the D-rings or other points of securement. Proper inspection and verification are critical to preventing cargo movement, structural damage to battery units, and potential thermal runaway events during heavy weather. You can read the full report at iimsusa.com. Up next, the HM Government of Gibraltar has published an accident report into the death of a pumpman on board a motor tanker at the Port of Gibraltar. On the afternoon of 20 May 2025, the pumpman of the Gibraltar-registered tanker Nisiris was fatally injured whilst operating the port forward mooring winch during heaving in excess rope, becoming entrapped in the mooring rope around the winch and sadly died of multiple injuries. At the time of the accident, the pumpman was alone on the forecastle as the AB had moved to a position further down on the main deck port side in preparation to receive a heaving line which would then be attached to the forward spring. As no one witnessed the accident, it is difficult to reach a firm conclusion as to what exactly happened. However, the mooring system management manual stipulates that there should always be a minimum of two experienced persons at each mooring station throughout the operation, apart from the officer in charge of the mooring station. The role of the officer is to supervise and keep an overview of the mooring operation. On this occasion, there was not an officer undertaking this role. In effect, the only person on the forecastle was the pumpman who was operating the port forward mooring winch by himself, at the same time as possibly ensuring that the mooring rope was correctly feeding and winding onto the winch's drum. The investigation concluded that the composition of the forward mooring party was not in compliance with the requirements of the mooring manual. Page 8 of the owner's preliminary assessment of the incident states that no officer was assigned to the mooring station forward in order to maintain compliance with hours of work and rest. The pumpman was operating the winch at the same time as ensuring that the mooring rope was possibly correctly feeding and winding onto the mooring winch's drum. Due to repetitive nature of the work undertaken, the crew may have become complacent. It is possible that the mooring winch actuator lever had been incorrectly secured in the running position by using the safety clip or external device. At this time, he may have become entangled in the slack rope, in all likelihood by standing too close to the winch's drum, subsequently resulting in being dragged in feet first under the rotating drum. You can read the full report via the Government of Gibraltar's website. Next, P&I Club Guard has warned that a serious source of engine damage can come as a result of automatic backflush filter failure. Guard highlighted that several claims have shown this fine filter mesh has disintegrated in use, resulting in pieces of the wire mesh entering the lube oil system and severely damaging engine bearings. In one Guard case, replacement of a crankshaft is expected to cost $2.2 million with an 8 to 12 week period just to source the new equipment. Where deterioration of the mesh is found, mechanical and chemical cleaning of the entire system affected will be required prior to operation. If the cleaning process is substandard, new damages may arise swiftly after repairs have taken place. Guard recommendations: to maintain backflush filters and prevent damage due to deterioration, ensure the correct manual and procedures for the actual filter system installed are available on board the vessel and that the crew have been adequately familiarized and trained. To ensure safe operation of the backflush filters, procedures on manual handling adherent to maker's recommendations should be in place, together with clear procedures on when filters are to be taken out of use due to damage and risk of failure. The engine crew should be trained to spot even minor damage to the candles. Training on how to handle the filters with care during cleaning is vital. Guard recommends having cleaning tools on board, like an ultrasonic cleaner unit or cleaning gun which blows horizontally on board. If not already installed, a strainer or inline filter should be installed after the backflush filter to ensure debris from candle disintegration is captured before it contaminates the oil system. Use OEM parts. If in doubt, contact your filter manufacturer for advice. Read the full advice, including how to avoid serious incidents, via Guard's website. For our next segment, the Republic of the Marshall Islands Maritime Administrator has released an investigation report into the death of a crew member from tanker TRF Kashima after the sailor and two other crew members had entered an enclosed space and fell unconscious on the 14th of July 2024. The marine safety investigation conducted by the Republic of the Marshall Islands Maritime Administrator determined the chief officer had entered the No. 6 SCT to take pictures required by the charterer, and that the OS2 and pumpman entered the cargo tank to aid the chief officer after they saw him lying on the upper platform. The entry into the cargo tank by the three crew members was not conducted in accordance with the ship's enclosed space entry procedures and without taking any required precautions. It was also determined that the chief officer had previously made multiple entries into the ship's cargo tanks, also to take pictures required by the charterer, while cargo tank cleaning operations were conducted on the 9th to the 11th and the 13th to the 14th of July 2024. Evidence of a lack of oversight by the master, crew member fatigue, and that records of work and rest hours were not being accurately maintained were also identified. The following lessons learned were identified. Enclosed spaces should never be entered for any reason, including to assist a fellow crew member, without implementing established shipboard procedures. Masters and other senior officers must place safety above all else, and through both their words and actions, provide a positive example for junior officers and ratings. And, deviations from established procedures increase the risk of accidents. You can download the full report via the IIMS website. For our next report, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority has issued an essential amendment to its guidance on the installation, testing and correct operation of oil filtering equipment, oily water separators. This marine notice clarifies AMSA's expectations for testing and operating oil filtering equipment, adds detail on sample line flow and alarm response times, explains how port state control officers assess system performance and compliance, highlights where non-compliance with MEPC 107, 49 and the ISM code will result in deficiencies, clarifies requirements for managing and sealing sample line valves, and reinforces that the alarm and stopping device must trigger during clean water flushing. For more information, visit iamsaustralia.com.au. Up next, a single technical error by an uninsured individual has resulted in the marine surveyor being hit with $70,000 settlement and prompted International Transport Intermediaries Club to warn ship and marine surveyors of the financial exposure they face when relying on third-party data without contractual protection. The dispute arose after a marine surveyor was appointed by a prospective buyer to confirm that a commercial fishing vessel met the requirements of the relevant Maritime Safety Authority. As part of the survey, the surveyor instructed a third-party naval architect to provide technical information needed to calculate the ship's freeboard. The data supplied was wrong, which led the surveyor to report the wrong freeboard and conclude that the vessel's recorded lightweight in the existing stability book was inaccurate. As a result of the incorrect information, the surveyor advised the buyer that the vessel required a full resurvey before it could enter service. In reality, the stability documentation was accurate. The buyer subsequently incurred the cost of the unnecessary second survey and missed three fishing trips while awaiting clearance, leading to claims for both the survey expense and the loss of income during the delay. ITIC assessed whether earnings from those missed trips could be claimed and considered the possibility that a court might decide the surveyor was responsible for profit loss that could have been anticipated. The situation was made more difficult by the fact that the naval architect responsible for the incorrect data had no insurance and no formal contract with the surveyor, leaving little chance of recovering any contribution. The claim was eventually settled for $70,000, covering the cost of the second survey and an agreed amount of the lost income. Mark Bratman, claims director at ITIC, said, "Many standard trading conditions exclude liability for consequential losses, such as loss of profits, but in this case, the surveyor was not operating under any such terms. Surveyors should check the credentials and insurance position of any subcontractors they work with and ensure their own terms include a limit on liability, an exclusion for consequential losses, and potentially an exclusion that states the surveyor is not responsible for inaccuracies in third-party information they have reasonably relied upon, all of which should be agreed in writing. It is also important to take care when advising buyers about follow-up surveys and the operational impact of those recommendations. Clear documentation and robust contracts remain central to reducing the risk of costly disputes." In our next report, the UK Maritime and Coast Guard Agency has updated and replaced guidance on fire safety and storage of small electric-powered craft on yachts. MGN 681M Amendment 1 includes clarification for the functionality of storage and charging cabinets or boxes where these are used as part of the solution for the carriage of lithium-ion batteries used on personal vehicles. Small electrically powered craft and other vehicles are becoming more commonly used in place of similar petrol-powered craft or vehicles stowed on yachts. Whilst electric craft do not necessarily represent a greater fire risk than petrol craft, there are considerable differences in best practice for fire prevention, storage, fire detection and fire suppression of such craft, which should be considered when they are stored on board. The guidance is explicitly for lithium-ion batteries. Batteries with alternative chemistries may present a different risk profile during charging or stowage. You can read the full guidance online on the news page of the IIAMS website. Next, this notice, issued by ABS, summarizes recent observations on bulk carriers where non-compliance with the requirements of SOLAS Chapter 12, Regulation 13.1 was identified in the forecastle space dewatering system manually operated suction valves. On bulk carriers and in accordance with SOLAS Regulation 12, 13.1, MSC Circular 1069 and IACKSUISC 179, the arrangements for draining and pumping ballast tanks located forward of the collision bulkhead and the bilges of any dry space extending forward of the foremost cargo hold shall be capable of being brought into operation from a readily accessible enclosed space. This enclosed space shall be accessible from the navigation bridge or the propulsion machinery control position without the need to walk across open deck areas, i.e. exposed freeboard or superstructure decks. During recent inspections on two different bulk carriers from different owners, managers, the following cases in forecastle dewatering systems manually operated suction valves were observed. First case, the suction valve was found in the closed position with a warning sign instructing the crew to keep it closed while in port to avoid accidental discharges. Second case, a label above the dewatering valve stated "Do not open without chief officer's permission." ABS commented that both cases violate the intent of SULIS 12.13.1 as they restrict immediate operation of the dewatering system when needed. The valves must remain open at all times. ABS recommends that the manually operated suction valve of the forecastle space dewatering system must remain in the open position at all times. A clearly visible and appropriately worded warning notice should be posted in the vicinity of the valve. In our next report, DNV and the World Maritime Merchants Forum have worked together to create the Net Zero Guide, Practical Approaches for Shipping Companies. The report provides a structured framework to help ship owners, operators, and managers translate decarbonization objectives into actionable strategies. It focuses on how to align fleet operations, investments, and value chain partnerships with emerging regulatory and market expectations. In its executive summary, the guide recommends a three-step framework to help shipping companies translate decarbonization objectives into executable actions across their fleets, including assessment, strategic planning, and implementation and monitoring. You can download the report at dnv.com/maritime. Next, the American Bureau of Shipping has provided an overview of IMO Resolution MSC 581-110, revised recommendations for entering enclosed spaces aboard ships. The hazards from lack of oxygen and the buildup of gases such as carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide are well known, but their relationships are not always fully understood. More recent studies show that, as well as oxygen levels, the levels of carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide should be checked before entry is made to any enclosed space or adjacent connected space. To emphasize this, CO2 is now explicitly included in the revised recommendation. CO2 is a potent asphyxiant and can cause rapid loss of consciousness and death. Its behavior in cargo spaces justifies CO2 monitoring before and during enclosed space entry, in addition to CO and other toxic gases. The overview includes additional clarification on specific elements of the revised recommendations and address common questions regarding atmospheric monitoring, cargo-related hazards, and gas detection equipment, which you can read at iimsusa.com. And for our final story, the UK Cross-Party House of Lords Secondary Legislation Scrutiny Committee has criticised the length of time taken by the Marine and Coast Guard Agency to implement recommendations from marine accident reports made by the Merchant Shipping, Vessels in Commercial Use for Sport or Pleasure, Regulations 2025. The regulations set out various requirements for small and large vessels and introduce additional requirements arising from recommendations made in two reports by the Marine Accident Investigation Branch. The report sets out the following concerns. A 2015 marine accident recommendation concerning the inspection of vessels before undertaking offshore races has taken 10 years to implement, during which time a similar incident occurred in 2019. The MCA has not determined a timeline for the implementation of two further marine accident recommendations in relation to vessels covered by the regulations. There are currently 13 other outstanding marine accident recommendations beyond those related to the regulations which require implementation, with one dating back to 2016 which will not be implemented until 2026 at the earliest. The information shared with the committee by the MCA about the outstanding marine accident recommendations is at odds with its claim that it responds to them as quickly as possible. The committee has found that the time taken by the MCA to implement marine accident recommendations is unacceptable. The committee has urged the MCA to implement the two outstanding marine accident recommendations relating to vessels covered by the regulations at the earliest opportunity. That's all we have for this month. Thanks for listening.